Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry, sponsored by Atelier Le Sun, a fusion of culture of classic lines with contemporary feel is the vision behind the unique pearl jewelry designs by Atelier Le Sun. Today on Chatting with Sherry, we're going to talk with Bunny Goodjohn about her book, Bone Song. Welcome, Buddy.
Hi, Sherry. Good to be here with you.
Hi. I'm sorry, I called you Buddy.
That's fine.
And I have it written in front of me. I apologize. You're my buddy. Her name is Bunny, though, everybody.
B-U-N-N-Y.
Exactly. Like the cute little bunny.
Exactly.
Oh, sorry about that, my friend. Why don't you tell everybody about yourself and your background?
Gosh, okay. So my name's Bunny Goodjohn. I'm a transplant from London. I live in Virginia now. I came over here in 1999. And I stumbled into writing. I'd always written when I was a kid, but I'd never done it seriously, and I had never been told that one might write for a living or that one might teach other people how to write for a living. So when I arrived in America, I couldn't get a work visa. I ended up going back to college to get a degree, and I landed at Randolph Macon Women's College in Lynchburg, Virginia, and fell in love with the process of writing and did my undergraduate there, went off and did my master's through the Stone Coast MFA program, which is run by the University of Southern Maine. And when I finished that, I received a phone call from the dean at Randolph Macon Women's College asking me if I'd like to come back and teach as an adjunct. And I decided that, oh gosh, being 47 was a good time to completely throw my life up in the air and change my career and sell my house and all my worldly possessions and enter the world of teaching. And it was really inside this world that I have found myself as a novelist and as a poet. And so I found out in August last year that a collection of poetry that I had written had won the Liam Rector Prize for Poetry, and that part of that prize was publication through Briary Creek Press. So I am sitting here in Lynchburg patiently awaiting a box of books from my publisher. So that's where I am at the moment. I have one novel out. I have this poetry book launching at some point in the next 3 or 4 weeks, and then another novel due out in November. And the rest of the time I teach. I teach creative writing and composition at the, it's now called Randolph College because we went co-ed back in 07. So I have a great life, Sherry. Who has it better than I do?
That's great. That's so great. Isn't it cool to get your book, to actually hold it in your hand?
You know, it's very strange. I know that when my novel came out, a very important looking box arrived on my doorstep, and inside were 20 author copies. And I really didn't know what to do with them. I unpacked them, and then I strategically placed them on the coffee table and hoped that somebody would come round so that I could say, oh, yes, that's my novel. So I'm sure I'm going to be doing exactly the same thing with this box of books that arrives, although I've been a bit more proactive, I guess. I think when the novel came out, I was still living in that, that D.H. Lawrence world where all one has to do is do the writing and then somebody else does all the promotion for you. And to be honest with you, I completely dropped the ball on it. It doesn't exist. It didn't exist. It doesn't exist. And it's not going to exist. So this time I've been working pretty hard on the bit that I hate, which is the self-promotion. I'm hating it less. The more I do it, the easier it gets. But so to this end, I actually, in another life that I have, I absolutely adore, as we were speaking about earlier, the 70s and the 80s, and to that end, I have a small store online where I sell all manner of mid-century stuff, and I sell my books there too. Etsy, it's an Etsy store, and Etsy has this wonderful model whereby they actually consider the author's own book as being handmade, which I think is beautiful. So even though it's published by an outside publisher, I'm allowed to sell it online because it's handmade. And, you know, they're absolutely right. It is handmade. And I think
it is.
Today,
it's a crafted piece of work. It's art.
Exactly. And I think that with the issue today about writers not only having to write but also having to promote and market, we sell each book one at a time by hand, you know. So I thought that was pretty apt. So I have this wonderful online store that has my books and then all manner of strange stuff that I pick from thrift stores and Goodwills and then sell on. So I'm trying this time to be a little bit more proactive with getting that box of books off of my porch and my coffee table into the hands of people who might like to read it.
That's amazing. That's also a great idea. I had no idea Etsy did that.
I actually had to write them a letter and ask them if that would be okay. And after about 3 weeks, they came back to me and said, "Well, yeah, you know, I think that we'd consider them to be handmade." So, yeah. So if anybody else is out there writing and struggling with this marketing promotion issue, they might want to consider that as a possible place or vehicle by which to sell the books and to get their work out there.
Yeah, it just gave me an idea.
Take commission,
I accept all ideas, you know. I mean, I think that's a great thing. 'Cause one of the things that's very difficult for me, as well as for any other author, is getting your book out there. I go to conventions, I've had book signings, and they're great, but it's not international. You know, and I'm not the type of person that has a lot of money that can go flying all over the place and do it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I can't go to every convention, and I can't go to every book fair because I can't afford it.
Right.
So and online, also, you know, is a godsend.
I think so, and I do tend to shun conventions. I've come to the realization that I am pretty much an introvert, and therefore that doesn't mean that I hate company. It just means that it exhausts me. So when I go to conferences, I find them absolutely exhausting, and so it's not my favorite place to be. And also, I wonder who's at the conference. The people who are at the conference are all trying to sell.
They're all trying to sell their own books. Yeah.
You know, and we don't have a lot of money, and therefore, you know, I am buying books, but I'm not throwing loads of cash at books, and I can't afford to go to a lot of conferences. So I really do think that online is it has to be the arena that, whether I like it or not, that has to be my arena, just because of finances and lack of time and things like that. But it's a hard, hard arena for me to feel comfortable in, because you can be in a situation whereby you have very little feedback, apart from maybe, clicks on hearts and likes and things like that. So it is kind of strange.
It is. Well, I've done both. I've done conventions. I've done online. And I've done book fairs. I'm not a big fan. I mean, if you do great at book fairs, all power to you. Please keep doing it. But I'm not, for myself, that big a fan of book fairs because, A, it costs a lot for a table. B, you're basically surrounded by other authors. You're not really surrounded by readers.
Yeah.
You know, there, unless it's like the LA Book Festival or the New York Book Festival, that's different because everybody
right.
goes to that. It's open and
right.
there's a lot. It's UCLA and in LA, and a lot
right.
of people go to that. I'm talking about the little book fairs that are across the country. It's very difficult for the author. You're sitting in a tiny little place that's about an inch big, and you have
right.
as much of your books as you can fit, and you're trying to gather the attention of the few readers that come by, and you're in competition, which I don't like, with all the other authors. You don't
yeah.
want to be in competition. You want to be nurturing and helping each other, not fighting tooth and nail to sell my book.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of strange. I was talking to a colleague of mine. He teaches here too. His name is Gary Dopp. And he said that writers should promote at least 10 other writers.
Mm-hmm.
And that they should have like a little stable of favorites that they will do anything for, you know, whether that's buying their books or blogging about them or linking to their page or whatever it is. Because really, as you said, it's writers helping writers to find the readers. I want to find readers. I don't really want to find other writers. It's a hard thing to do.
That's why I started my show, actually, is
right.
because of that. I want to help my fellow writers.
Right.
But I understand. You want to find your readers.
Yeah, I mean, it's I love the company of writers. And that's one of the reasons why I teach. There's nothing finer than working with emerging writers, you know, undergraduates who are just starting out. But I also love to be around pure readers, people who don't write. And they seem to be, I don't know whether they're a dying breed, that's probably a little melodramatic, but there aren't as many people willing to devote time and attention to text. And so I think there's more and more writers trying to attract the attention of a smaller group of readers. So, yeah.
I think that there are readers out there, and I do think they're thirsting for new things. I really do.
Right, right.
I not only write published works, I write fan fiction, which is
right.
totally different off the subject. But one thing I know, and I see it when I look at Google+ and Facebook and Tumblr from my friends that are fellow fans, they're thirsting for stories. They're thirsting.
Well,
why aren't you writing new stuff? I mean, they're thirsting for it. So I know there are people out there who want to read. It's just, it's not affordable. You know, books are expensive.
Yeah.
I have a list of 5 books I want, and they're expensive. I can't afford
yeah.
them.
It is kind of interesting. When my first novel came out, it came out in hardback, and I was really pleased about that because somebody had told me that the libraries won't take a book. This was back in 2007. They won't take a book unless it's in hardback. So I thought, yay, it's in hardback. I'll get into libraries. And then I tried to sell it into local bookstores, and it was $29.99.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we can't sell it at that price. So really, until that came out in paperback and then Kindle as an e-book, I didn't, you know, I managed to sell that first print run of hardback, thank goodness, and it went into paperback. But I think until it actually got down to $10 as a Kindle edition, I think the paperback was going at $12.99 or something. But
yeah,
I think you're right. We have to try and get to some place whereby writers aren't doing it for free, which I think is a terrible model that we need to stop doing.
Yeah.
But the readers aren't being absolutely bankrupted in order to pursue something that they love.
The $30 is what gets, you know, because when a new book comes out, especially from a famous author, they're
right.
on the hardcover, and you have to wait
yeah.
like a year, maybe longer, before the paperback
yeah.
comes out. And
yeah.
you're like, oh, I really want to read it, but I can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know? You're
yeah.
kind of hoping and sending out hints, give it to me for my birthday.
And I don't know about you, Sherry, but I love libraries. I spend a lot of my time promoting libraries. I think that they're absolutely wonderful. And yet, if I'm reading something I don't like to read a library copy because I want to write all over it. That's the problem.
Yeah,
I can't
I
read
know.
without a pen in my hand. So I have to remind myself when I am reading a library book or something at college that I've got on library loan, that I mustn't have a pen in my hand at the time because I'm likely just to annotate the whole thing.
And that's why I like used bookstores.
Me too.
Because, first of all, you can afford it. Second
right.
of all, you have the fun of doing whatever you want to the book. And also, you can see what other readers did to the book.
Isn't that wonderful?
As long as they don't destroy it or trash it, it's great.
I love reading the previous person and thinking what they thought. But, you know, does that give you any sense of dilemma? And this isn't a question that I know the answer to, as to when you buy a book secondhand, none of the royalty goes to the author. And that kind of gives me a little bit of pause. I mean, I go ahead and do it. I have a kind of a rule. If they're dead, I get it secondhand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
If they're alive and they're in my stable of 10 writers that I'm promoting, I'd buy it brand new, and the others are kind of like a grey area. It depends how much I want it and whether I'm willing to wait for the paperback. But it's
that's why I haven't bought those 5 books yet, is because I can't afford them yet. I'm waiting for them to come out in paperback because I'm going to buy
right.
them.
Right.
I'd only buy, Agatha Christie, Ray Bradbury, because he's passed, people
right.
like that. Dan Brown, I buy new.
Uh-huh.
Joe Rawlings, I buy new.
Right.
Can't afford them most of the time because they're $30.
Yes, and I wonder.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wonder how much readers realize how little of that $30 the author gets.
Yeah, exactly. Very little.
Yeah.
It's like a hundredth of it.
Kind of like that, yeah. But, you know, as you said before, there is nothing that beats the books arriving and you holding one in your hand. It's just
especially
magical.
Especially with your name on it.
Oh, goodness me, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like the smell and hold of a book. I mean, I have electronic air. I read a lot because authors also send me their books, so I read them and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But I love the holding a book in my hand. I love the smell of the paper. I love the feel of curling up in my bed, non-professionally, reading a book before I go to bed.
Right.
It's just, it's a comfort. They're like
yeah.
a little buddy.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I get the same sense of enjoyment from reading on my iPad, although I do. I mean, if I'm traveling, then I'll download. In fact, I'll go to the libraries and I'll go to the libraries online and download from there. But there is something about a brand new book that it's not quite the same opening a file as opening a book. I guess that's what it
mm-hmm.
is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. I mean, you look at the online all day. I mean, you're
right.
looking at. You know, it's just like looking at any other page. It's not exciting.
Right.
You get a book, it's like a little treasure, you know?
Right.
One of the joys I have is my father left me his library, and my brother and I split it. And when I pull out one of his books, I flip through to see if he put any notes in. It's like
mm-hmm.
my father passed on. So it's like a little piece of him
right.
is with me, even though he's gone.
Right.
I mean, I know that sounds kind of weird, but that's the way.
No, I think that those things we write in the books that we love they're a conversation, I think, that we're having with the author. So then when we pick up a secondhand book or when you pick up your father's book, it's almost a three-way conversation. You're having a conversation with your father who had a conversation with the author. So, and I think that's reading is that, isn't it? It's about interaction, not only with the words on the page, but also with the author in some way. You know, what was the author thinking? Why did they
yeah.
put it like this? Yeah.
And don't you feel like sometimes they reach into your head? You're reading a book and you're like, oh my God, that's exactly how I feel. And I don't
well,
know
you
the
know
person
what?
From Adam.
Yeah, I do feel that. And I wonder whether it's, we all think we're so damn unique, you know, and yet we're not. You know, I think humankind, We all have the same kind of fears, and I think
mm-hmm.
we all have the same kind of dreams. What the author has is the ability to make those concrete on the page.
Yep.
And at that point, as you say, there's a reaching out from author to reader and a connection. And
mm-hmm.
I think that the reason why people love to read is because we crave that connection. And whether it's fiction, whether it's prose or poetry, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, I think it all really achieves the same thing.
Yep. It's human connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I agree. That's why they're your little friends. Well, especially if you're a bookworm, which I've always been. You can't help it.
Right. Right.
We only have about 10 minutes, so I want you to tell the people listening about your book, your new book, Poetry. Tell them what you'd like them to take away from it, and, you know, whatever you'd like. Go ahead.
Well, I guess when we write fiction, it's rather comforting for the author, because even though we may represent truth on the page, we can say, but it's fiction, you know, this isn't about me, this isn't particularly revealing. I think that for me, when I get into poetry, it does become revealing. And of course, not every poem with a word I in it is about the poet. You know, the poet assumes certain personas, but thinking about all of that, I think I have to be very upfront about this book and say that 90% of it is autobiographical and 10% of it is not, and I'm not going to tell you which 10% is persona. So to be to kind of sum this book up, it's a book about a journey from childhood to present day. The middle poem in the book, and it's the title poem, Bone Song, is a sestina that catalogues a 28-day stay in a rehab. That hit my life in 2005. And I see that as a pivotal point in my life, a point where my life kind of ran off the tracks, but then managed to write itself on another set of better tracks. So that's what the book deals with. It deals with pre-recovery and post-recovery. And it starts way back in childhood and ends, as I say, probably round about a woman in her 50s, I guess. What I want people to take from it is that I have no fear of the word accessible when it comes to poetry. A lot of poets, in my opinion, get a little bit fussy when they think that poetry is accessible. People like Billy Collins, who I love, his poetry is accessible, and I see there being nothing bad in that. It means that anybody can pick up his poetry and read it and understand it and connect with him. I think that's what I strive for. I don't want people to avoid my book because they don't like poetry. I think that these are tiny stories, and some of them are written in free verse, and some of them are written in forms, such as I say, the sestina. There's a couple of sonnets in it. There's some bad language in it. Some of the poems are funny. Some of them are pretty sad, and some of them are pretty cruel. And so I guess I would like people to approach the book as a way of experiencing a life journey, whether they're on that particular train track or not. They don't have to be, you know, a struggling alcoholic addict to get something out of it. They don't have to be female to get something out of it. But I think that the book hands over certain opportunities for connection. So it's written in language that you'd understand. You won't need a dictionary. It talks about some paintings. I also love painting. I think there's an intersection between poetry and painting. And it's cheap. It's not $29.99. It's about $11. And I would love to see more people reading poetry. I think in our fast-paced world, what is better suited to that than a one-page poem that hands over a moment? So I guess that's my spiel. Yeah, for this book.
I agree about the poetry. I think I've always done both prose and poems, and I've always written poems even before I started writing stories. Well, no, that's
right.
I wrote story first, then poem, but I've always never had a problem with both. My poetry is like, they're different. My poetry is torn from what I'm going through, whatever it is.
Right.
Mine's very personal. It has nothing to do with, like, being esoteric or anything like that. Mine's I'm going through a difficult time and I pour my poem. That's why I rarely publish my poems, because it sounds like I'm suicidal if you read them.
you hit on something really important. This book lays me bare, and I'll be walking into classrooms afterwards. So I think that you have to be prepared to put everything out there in poetry, that because there's no filter on it. There can't be, because it comes. You said a wonderful phrase about. Did you say that it was ripped from emotion or?
Yeah.
I can't quite remember what you said. But
I said ripped from my soul.
That's it. I think that poetry it has more heart in it than fiction. I think fiction has more head.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite scary writing poetry. I think it's as scary as writing creative nonfiction memoir, because you are putting yourself out there. But hey.
I agree. Writing what you did, a book of your poems, I don't know if I could do that, because I wrote like poems when my father died. I wrote poems when I was very ill, and I wrote poems when my life was going through some really difficult times.
Right.
That kind of stuff is raw. And it takes a really brave person to want to put that out there. I do publish poems from time to time, and I've done that, but it's more of the less raw ones.
Right.
You can't tell it's as personal as the ones that are just, I need to get it out. I read a poem when my father passed away at his funeral. I could never publish that. It is such a personal poem. You know what I mean?
Sometimes time gives us an opportunity to be able to do it. You know, once time has passed and things have cooled down a little bit, sometimes we can go back and it takes a little less bravery if some time has gone past. But you're right. I don't know whether it's bravery or foolhardiness. Or whether it's ego. It could well be ego, Sherry. You know, that's the other side of it too. But I think you need a little bit of ego in order to write and try and get published. Yeah.
I'm pretty comfortable with. It's just, and like I said, I have had some of my poetry published. It's just like I don't know if I could find enough to do a whole book, because I've actually thought about it. I went through it and looked at it, and I'm like, nah.
I've just come off of April's poem a day that I do every year, where I get together with a few friends and we write very bad poetry. We have to write one poem every single day. So now I'm sitting on a stack of 30 bad poems that I might do something with, but that's how you get a book's worth. You just have to keep writing.
Okay. It doesn't seem to call me except when I'm in heartache. Everybody's different, but that's me. That's when I start writing. It's when I'm upset. It's a way for me to get. And that's another thing people don't realize. When you write, you get it out of your system. When you're mad at someone and you create a great villain out of that person you're mad at, it's gone. You no longer have that hate in your heart, because it's
and you can do all manner of nasty things to them, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's purge, baby. we've come to the end. I want to ask you if you have any events that are coming up, and do you have another book that you're working on?
Gosh. I'm waiting for this box of books to arrive on my porch before I launch my calendar of events. I have a website which is really easy to remember. It's bagoodjohn.com, and there is an events page on there. So that's going to start filling up shortly. I have a reading at the local YWCA, and I'm judging some a writers' conference in July. But the best thing to do is to go to that website and have a look. As regards the next book, goodness knows, I said I'd never write a novel again, but I think I have a novel percolating. So classes finished on Friday, finals finish at the end of this week, then I'm off for the summer. So maybe that novel will start over the summer.
Yeah, well, I understand that. Thank you, Bunny. Thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed it. I hope you did.
Thank you, Sherry. It's been an absolute pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.